Hey everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Jason Lipschutz, and I am an associate editor and the Pop Shop blog editor of Billboard.com. Based in New York, on the other line in Los Angeles, is the associate director of charts sales at Billboard, Keith Caulfield. How's it going, Keith?
Well, hi. That was a really traditional way of introducing me.
I know, man. I never introduce you by like your official title, and I'm usually like the broccoli to my carrot. Like, and maybe people don't even know you work at Billboard.
The
maybe
Taco Bell to my Del Taco. The Burger King to my Dairy Queen.
Maybe people are just like, who is this Keith guy? Why doesn't he have like a title? Is he just like a big chart nerd that they pulled off the street?
Yes.
But no, Keith works at Billboard. Keith, we are here at the finish line of 2014. This is the final Pop Shop podcast of 2014. It is a special year-end extravaganza. We are not going to be talking about the current Hot 100 or Billboard 200. We are going to be talking about the year-end charts a little bit, as well as the year in review, the biggest artists, the biggest surprises, the new stars, the one-hit wonders, the surprise smashes, and all that and more. Keith, we got to talk about one thing first, though. You talked to somebody yesterday.
I did. Who was that?
We're recording us on Monday. You'll hear it on Tuesday. But on Sunday, Keith talked to someone whose name is Madonna.
Madonna.
And Keith.
Madonna. We keep it all inside.
So you interviewed Madonna this weekend, man. This is crazy.
I know. It's nuts.
Like, how excited were you? Because for those who don't know, who aren't regular listeners, Madonna is your all-time favorite artist, right?
Yes.
Okay. So how pumped were you?
Without question.
So what was it like, man? Like, take me through your mindset like a couple minutes before this interview happened. Like, what were you thinking about? How pumped were you?
Well, I'm so trying to not give you the long version of the story. just because I could probably end up talking about it forever. So
it's like a 4-hour podcast just about your interview with Madonna.
You know, I did suggest yesterday that we could just do an entire, like, every week we just do a Madonna podcast. I mean, we are back, like, in the promotional cycle, so it would make sense.
I know, right?
Every week we focus on a different Madonna hit. It'll be great. Okay, no, I'll shut up.
That'll be like Adam Scott's You Two Talking to Me podcast, where he just has, the actor Adam Scott just has a podcast about You Two.
Yeah.
They talk about a new You Two album every week. So anyway. We're not going to do that. Talk about you talking to Madonna.
Yeah.
So how exciting was it?
It was very exciting, obviously. I think I would like to think that anyone would be excited to speak to Madonna, because she's freaking Madonna. This all happened because of what kind of started last week when we were talking about in last week's podcast about all of her demos leaking to the web last Tuesday out of the blue. You know, she had a bunch of demos that were stolen, and we went into great detail about how disappointing that was and it shouldn't be happening to Madonna and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, on Friday night, she puts up her album for pre-order, announces it. Rebel Heart is the name of the album. It comes out March 10th. The album did not have a name. The album didn't have a release date until Friday night. And on top of this, she decided to release 6 tracks as instant grat tracks and also available to purchase as standalone tracks. So it was a happy holiday. If we took a holiday, it would be so nice. On Friday night for Madonna fans. And this was a way counter the leaks, you know, change the conversation a little bit and talk about new finished recordings way ahead of schedule. So then on Saturday, I got an email from her publicist, her longtime publicist, Liz Rosenberg, who has been her publicist since Madonna joined Warner Brothers in 1982, asking if I wanted to talk to Madonna on Sunday. And
you're like, well, maybe.
Maybe.
I know. You know, I got like a lot going on Sunday.
It's Sunday. I don't really work.
Going to watch some football.
Yeah, I'm totally watching the football. Is that football thing still happening right now?
Football thing still happening.
The football thing's the thing with the foot and the ball. And anyway, yes. I said yes. And I talked to Madonna on Sunday. And it was great. It was a great conversation. We talked a lot about the leaks, her new music, her first single from the album, Living for Love, talked a little bit about, I don't know, a lot of stuff, but you asked me specifically how was I feeling.
Well, first of all, congrats on the interview. It's a really great interview. She talked to a couple other sources, but I would say out of the three interviews she did on Sunday, yours was the best. I know I'm biased, man, because, you know, you're my podcast host, you're my friend, but yours was the best interview. And so my question to you was, I'm reading this interview and she's talking about the leaks, and it's obvious that it's been a very long couple days for her. How did she sound when talking about the leaks? Like, was she in the mode of like, this was a total pain in the ass, or was she just kind of past them and like, listen, this happened and now we got to move on? Like, what was her attitude like?
She didn't sound like pissed off. I mean, she did. I mean, she, when we got into it a little bit more, I mean, she was very specific. And she was very, very aware, and also very mindful. She had clearly been thinking about this a lot, and probably been talking about it for a while. And you know, a lot of the things that she was saying was probably things that she'd been saying to her team over the past week or so. And when I kind of, if you read the interview, I kind of kept going back and forth with her, saying, you know, because I was telling her, I'm like, you know, and I didn't put this into the interview, because it was, sometimes when you cross over into that weird fan area, it gets a little funky to put into an interview.
Sure.
But I said in the course of the conversation, because we were talking about the leaks, I said, you know, this is just sucky. It's just sucky. She's like, it is. She's like, I want to play my music at photo shoots. I want to like dance and celebrate it, and I can't. And it's just, it's sucks. And you know, her voice raised, and she was animated about it, and she was, you know, upset, and you know, she was also, it was just like a frustration. It was just a frustration. She's like, you know, it's just the world that we're living in now. Like, the internet is wonderful, but it also is, it could be damaging. And, you know, we're having to sort of navigate this and try to figure things out as we go along now. And, she was animated about it. And what I did say was, and I didn't put this in the interview, into the print version. What I said was, you know, it's really sucky. I said, you know, this is coming from someone who's been a fan of yours for a really long time. I'm like, I know you hear this all the time. She's like, no, it's okay. You can tell me. She was basically like, no, you can tell me. It's okay. And I said, but I've been a fan of yours for like more than 25 years. And coming from like the fan point of view, like, this is just so like sucky, because like, you had like this big rollout planned in your mind. And that part of the interview, that's in it. I just left out the part about me being a fan for such a long time, because it seemed a little bit weird to put that in there.
Yeah. Well, so here, the thing is that it's hard to for people to grasp the fact, like, just the longevity of Madonna's career, where, you know, you have an artist who's on maybe their third album or fourth album, and it leaks or something, or some songs leak, and they're like, well, all right, that's the age we live in. When Madonna started out, obviously, none of this happened. Like, she didn't have to worry about these leaks. And to hear her say, like, yeah, you know, I want to play my record at a photo shoot. Like, that's an understandable thing, because she used to be able to do that. Now it's like, someone, you know, wants these demos badly enough and they want to leak them enough, it's going to happen. Keith, you broke a couple of little tidbits of news. She said she's possibly playing the Grammys.
Yeah.
Kind of sly about that. What was the most surprising thing that Madonna said over the course of this interview?
Most surprising? Oh, God, I don't know. I mean, what did you think was the most surprising? Because you read it, and you're the one who edited it and posted it up on the site.
That's true. It was a tag team thing. I mean, I think that the most surprising thing, that's a good question. I think the most surprising thing
to
me.
Hey, you asked me.
I know. I think the most surprising thing to me was that she is still planning to go through all of the music video, like all of the traditional rollout points, and did so, and it is basically doing this on the fly. I guess that's the most surprising thing, is that just the amount of time that these things take to come together. I mean, I think it was somewhere that you said that she wasn't planning to release her first single until Valentine's Day.
Right.
And the fact that we have 6 new songs, that a video is coming, that all these, like, maybe a Grammy performance, all of these things are coming together so quickly. And I figured that, you know, after these demos leaked, a couple weeks down the line, maybe we'd get some new stuff from Madonna and to kind of combat these leaks, to kind of hurry up. And but especially because it's like the holiday times, like no one wants to be doing this right now. And but she's so committed to, all right, let's do this stuff leaked and we got to figure this out now. And talking about sleepless nights, it's really impressive. And that, I think that was the most surprising thing to me, is that just she came up with his plan kind of on the fly, and now, you know, really delighted people a little bit before Christmas with these gifted 6 songs.
People also don't understand, I think the general public doesn't understand how iTunes works during the holiday season. iTunes effectively shuts down shortly.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Shortly before Christmas, they're done until the new year. So if you don't get your product ingested into the iTunes system by around December 22nd, you're not going to get in there. Basically, like you may be able to still get in there, but you will not be able to have your album in one of the flash boxes on the banner, on the banners in the front page. It won't have any front page placement, because they have a skeleton staff and there's no one doing this. And this happens every year. And so, she said something in a different interview where she said, basically, you know, we had a 50-yard dash to sort of, you know, turn this thing around by last Friday night in order to get it up onto iTunes. And people think, oh, it's really simple. You know, you just give it to iTunes and they just pop it onto the site. I'm like, really? It's not that easy. I'm like, yeah. If you were refreshing iTunes throughout the night on Friday night, like I was, it was like, you'd see like 2 songs, 3 songs, it would be on the website, but it wouldn't be in the iTunes program. Like, it takes a while for it to sort of filter through all of iTunes around the world as it goes through all the different time zones and all the different... It's crazy.
It is true.
So, you know, it's that. It's that craziness of launching something literally at the last minute, because this was not... that this all came together because of the leaks. Like, so they had basically like 2 or 3 days to pull this thing together. And by the way, the album is not finished. There is an album available for pre-order where the actual final contents and the recording of said album is not finished yet.
Yeah.
So
what's your take on the new songs? I wrote about Living for Love on Saturday morning. What do you think about the 6 songs?
I gracefully bowed out of reviewing the single because I figured that I might be biased.
I think you might have been. Before you say anything, I really liked the single a lot. And what I wrote was that for the last 2 albums, and I really didn't like Hard Candy at all. And I was pretty okay with MDNA, but I feel like what she was trying to do with her dance material needed to have more of that classic Madonna feel, more personality from the 80s and early 90s. And I feel like she's really captured that with these songs, especially Living for Love. It feels very modern in terms of the production, which I believe is Diplo.
Yeah, it's
but I feel like it's still the same person. It's not Madonna trying to bend toward the sensibilities of pop music now. It's trying to confine some of the patterns of pop now into her personality, into her aura. Like, I think that it's just a really great marriage of the past and present. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of what's always been, when Madonna is at her best, what shines through is Madonna. There is always the constant is Madonna. No matter who the producer or songwriter that she's working with is, the constant through line is Madonna. That's what makes the records rise to a different level. So when people talk about, oh, she's working with all these different producers and, you know, her style's all over the place, I'm like, yeah, but at the core of it is still Madonna. Like, she's still writing, you know, lyrics. She's still coming up with melodies and musical ideas. And I think that you're correct. I think especially on Living for Love, which is the first single, which is sort of a soul meets house music sort of thing, I think it works. It's the right balance between the two. And, you know, we talked about it in the interview where we said that, and I left this snippet out because I was kind of rambling. I said, you know, it's kind of like, I said, you know, it makes perfect sense. Like, the kind of soul, sort of R&B music that you can do really well with house music. And I said, Madonna and house music. I'm like, duh, that makes sense. Like, Madonna, house, dance, duh. And that's why she said, yeah, it's like the old me and the new me, like, put together. I'm like, it's all versions of you. And we had, like, well, sort of a, you know, girlfriend moment. But
well, what's funny is that it's easy to forget that her last two lead singles, which were 4 minutes featuring Justin Timberlake, Timbaland was in there, and then Give Me All Your Lovin', which was Nicki Minaj and M.I.A., she kind of sounded a little bit like a co-star on those songs.
Yeah.
And that, definitely, and that, definitely I think, was 4 minutes. The problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it, I think that was part of the problem with it. I mean, you have to go up back to Hung Up, I guess, to remember something, a lead single this impactful, this full of personality. Anyway, yeah. we gotta move on, man, because we are...
This isn't the Madonna podcast.
This isn't the Madonna podcast.
Damn it.
Again, great job on it, man. And for those who haven't read the full interview, there's a lot more that we didn't touch upon here. Check that out on Billboard.com. I will link that in the podcast post. So, Keith, 2014, man. Hey.
What a year.
2014. What a year. What a year.
What a year.
So let's go through a couple.
Let's break it down.
Let's break it down.
It's a packed podcast this week, Jason.
I know. It's a packed podcast. We have so much to cover.
So much to cover.
So let me ask you a question. In your opinion,
yeah,
what was the biggest musical story of the year, Keith? Like, what do you think will, if we had to take away one thing from 2013. If we had to take away one thing from 2014, we're going way back. We're talking about Robin Thicke.
Yeah, we're talking about Robin Thicke. We're talking about the return of Daft Punk, baby.
We're talking about Capital Cities. No.
Capital Cities?
What will we remember most about 2014?
Out of all the artists, you think of Capital Cities.
I know, man.
I think... Oh, wow. I think... I'm so bad at like picking one thing whenever it comes to these things where you ask me like, what's your favorite this? What's the one thing? I immediately think of sort of recent stuff. I immediately think of album sales in going, you know, into the tank. Taylor Swift removing her stuff from Spotify, and then Taylor Swift sells a million copies of her album. I immediately think of that. I think of, you know, streaming versus sales and how we're moving to become a streaming society. I also think of, and this is because I'm not narrowing it down to one thing, I also think of something frivolous like Year of the Booty. You know, I think of, yeah, you know, all the bodacious rear ends that were on display. I mean, if you go from one extreme to another, something very businessy and something very, you know, economic driven to something that's very sort of purient. But then you have, you know, things that, you know, are just musical and magical, you know, like big, huge hit songs that you didn't expect. So, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of all over the place. I can't think of, like, what was the one big story. What was the one big story to you? Was there one?
I mean, you started with Taylor Swift. Obviously, that's one of them. And just the fact that she's so outgaining other artists in terms of album sales and has... I mean, she was a superstar before 2014, but this seems like she, it seems like she dominated the entire fourth quarter.
She kind of like sucks the air out of the room. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a huge story. I think the biggest story and what we'll remember 2014 by, in the same way that I remember 2013 as kind of the year of Miley Cyrus and she dominating headlines that year, I feel like 2014 belongs to Iggy Azalea. I really do. I feel like the entire year from... Even the beginning of the year went, I mean, Fancy, the video for Fancy came out, I think, in February. And it, from there on, it's just been everything Iggy Azalea. Even this week, she's still, you know.
Ooh, in the news for all the wrong reasons.
Celia Banks.
Or right reasons, I don't know.
Yeah, T.I. is defending her on Twitter. I mean, it just seems
Q-tips
like.
Q-tips going off on her.
Yeah, it just seems like nonstop.
Not going off on her. Let me clarify, because someone's going to say something. He was not trying to go off on her. He was just sort of trying to explain the history of hip-hop to her and how she fits into it contextually.
Well, that's the thing, is that she was just such a cultural lightning rod this year. And that's one of the things that I enjoy about covering music, is that people get in on the discussion when there are certain things. I mean, not only talking about the quality of her music, but the cases of cultural misappropriation or appropriation, however you want to view it, and as well as the huge chart-topping hits, as well as, you know, having an Australian white female dominating hip hop charts. It's just seems like Iggy Azalea, her star exploded this year that I think of her first and foremost. And then I guess Taylor Swift would be number two, but that's the thing. Like I said, that's one of the things I love about covering music is that at the beginning of the year, if you told me that like the biggest story of the year would be Iggy Azalea, I'd been like, oh, really? Like the girl that T.I. has been promoting as part of Grand Hustle for a while, who's still trying to find a hit.
You mean the white girl, that work song that didn't
she was around for a really long time in the same way that like 2013, if you told me that Robin Thicke was going to have the song in the summer, I'd be like, really? Are you sure? So
you mean that white guy who sings R&B music? You mean that white girl who sings hip hop music?
I know. It's just always unpredictable, and it's been fascinating.
And then look at what happened to Robin Thicke.
Yeah.
Will that happen to Iggy Azalea?
No, I don't think so.
She's had more than one hit. She's not like a one hit.
Yeah,
wonder.
She's had more than one hit, and I think that she. I mean, who was I talking to? I think that. Oh, you know what? I was out to brunch yesterday with my fiance with my fiance and one of her friends who has an 11-year-old daughter, and her friend who has an 11-year-old daughter told me that her daughter's favorite artist is Iggy Azalea, and she's dying to go to her arena tour next year. And I was just like, wow, like even 11 years old. I mean, obviously she gets a ton of play on pop radio. She just has such younger fans. I mean, I saw it when I saw her at Lollapalooza. It wasn't like I was like the oldest person in the crowd at Lollapalooza, and you know, she's just a superstar now. And even though, you know, you could count the number of hits she's had on one hand, I think she's gonna keep having them. I really do. Mm. And I mean, isn't there a new rumor that Britney Spears' next single features Azalea?
Yeah,
it's coming out in early 2015.
I think our pal Brad Stern, who we name checked last week, hey Brad, he's like super Britney fan. Like he's yeah. If you think I'm a big Madonna fan, he's like huge Britney fan.
He outshines your fandom.
Yeah,
I will say that
he does it and does it well. I think he reported that there's going to be a Britney featuring Iggy track,
even this year, I mean, look at the song Booty. Jennifer Lopez originally had Pitbull on that song and was like,
quick, find another like hot person of the moment.
That song. So people
forget that rapper. Let's get this other one in here.
I know. It's crazy.
Besides,
anyway,
Pitbull
so
wouldn't have looked that good in a bikini. I mean, I'm sure he looks great in a bikini in the Booty video, but you know, I mean, Iggy is a little bit more impressive, which you can have like sort of the faux lesbianic action happening in a video, because really,
yeah, this year was
that
like the
really
faux,
sells, you know,
the faux lesbian, because you think of that Shakira song with Rihanna.
Good
too.
Lord, that was so, and that was that this year? No, it wasn't.
That was this year, yeah.
No,
man.
It was not.
It was, yeah.
That was that the was first like, single from the album.
It was like January, yeah.
Really? Are you sure?
The album came out in March, and the single came out, I believe, in January.
I'm checking that right now because I feel like that song was so much older.
I know, it feels
like
forever.
I feel
like
it's 2013. But yeah, it's the horrible sort of like like titillation with like lesbianism. Can't remember to forget you. No, good Lord, that was that was January.
Told you, man.
Man, well, can't remember to forget you. We already forgot the single.
Yeah,
except we remember
so
the video.
Let's skip around to a next topic, which you brought it up, Year of the Booty. You think about, obviously, the Booty video, but you also think about Anaconda and Nicki Minaj. I mean, these songs, you feel like the pop world is just looking at what Miley Cyrus did last year with twerking and kind of salaciousness and just kind of jacking that racy style. And I mean, it's obviously working. Do you think that is what happened this year?
Well, it feels like a weird sort of like, you know, bodacious accumulation, culmination. Yeah. A bodacious culmination. It's like I'm like Don King or something, trying to hype up.
Where the hell did that come from?
Well, you know, because he was like a bodacious culmination. Like he'd like, you know, hype a mic. Anyway, am I right? Did somebody? Anyway,
I just wasn't expecting a Don King impression.
Yeah, that's.
I loved it though.
You can count on me for obscure pop culture references. I don't know if they're all taking their cues from Miley Cyrus's Wrecking Ball video, but I think I think there's something to be said about how there is a more receptive generation now to more kind of challenging and sort of racy content. I think the teenagers now are so accustomed to seeing racy imagery on Twitter and Tumblr and the internet. They've grown up with the internet. Like seeing like a booty or someone in a bikini or boobs, like that's kind of doesn't faze them.
Yeah.
And it phases older people because we're, you know, like we're basically, if you think back to like, you know, the mid-80s where you'd have like, you know, Video Vixens and like heavy metal videos or like Madonna showing her belly button, like that was really racy. Ooh boy. Or like, you know, scroll back even farther to Elvis Presley like shaking his hips on the Ed Sullivan Show. It's just, it depends on the generation. And I think the year of the booty just means no, that's the way people are dressing. That's video now. That's the imagery that we're used to. And it's titillating to some, and it's just sort of standard operating procedure for others. But it's still certainly titillating, period, and it gets the clicks. And, you know, it doesn't mean that every video is going to work. You could have a really crappy... I mean, Booty, the song, didn't really go anywhere.
Yeah,
the video was kind of a hit, but we remember Jennifer Lopez and the video for Booty, but no one really... The song didn't happen. You know, it became...
I agree. No, I think you're totally right. It does get the clicks, and maybe that helps its YouTube numbers and stuff like that. But yeah, it's not like, you know, showing your ass is going to guarantee a hit. It never will. So I mean, it'll be interesting to see where it goes from here, because you have, you know, the year of the booty is, I feel like it's done.
Year
it's,
of the full frontal. Next up, 2015. Watch next.
Oh man. Anyway, from You're the Booty to One Direction. One Direction.
Booties that we did not see this year. No leaked booties from the One Direction camp.
No leaked booties. But you know what? They are, despite that, in spite of the no bootiness, they're Billboard's top artist of the year. And Keith, before we move on, we named One Direction our top artist of the year. What does that mean in terms of the chart world?
What that means is... basically, when we do our year-end charts, they are based on, in general, chart performance on the Billboard charts between the first charts dated in December of 2013 through the final charts in November of 2014, because, you know, we have to stop the calendar year at some point so we can actually make these charts, so it's not a full, you know, January to December time frame. So for Artist of the Year specifically, that particular recap, where One Direction is our top Artist of the Year, it ranks the best performing acts derived from activity on the Billboard 200 Albums chart, the Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart, as well as streaming, social, and box score data. And box score means touring, like touring grosses data, because we collect that as well. One Direction had the biggest tour of the year with the Where We Are tour, I believe was the name of the tour. Their album, Midnight Memories, I think was the number 4 album of the year on the Billboard 200 chart. And they also are huge in terms of their social metrics. They're always big on our Social 50 chart, big streaming act. They weren't huge on our Hot 100 singles chart. They had like one like sort of really big hit, but it was really about looking at their social, their touring numbers, and the performance of the album on the Billboard 200. And you combine all that together, and they came out on top as our top artist of the year. And I have a full recap of this, as well as our top Billboard 200 album, which is the Frozen soundtrack, and the top Billboard Hot 100 single of the year, which is Pharrell's Happy. All that is recapped online, and we can link to it in the story online.
We will link to it in the story online. Yeah, I mean, we've said it time and again, but just what One Direction is still doing on their fourth album now. They just scored their fourth number one album in the U.S. It's just really impressive. This is not something that boy bands typically do. Even the most... you know, the huge ones, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, you had their explosions kind of lasted around three albums, and by the fourth album they were either done or they weren't relevant anymore.
Yes, but to interject, I'm half agreeing with you. Remember, those boy bands released albums with a much longer amount of time
much
between
quicker,
them.
Yeah.
Yeah. One Direction has put out four albums within like a 2.5 year period, basically. They put out two albums in their first year, and then every year after, they put out a new album. So they've been constantly turning it. Now, who knows what it'll be like next fall when we presume another album will come out.
Yeah,
but they already
five.
Have a stadium tour locked in through next summer, so they must feel very confident that they're going to be, you know, still hot in a year from now.
Yeah, and as I've said many times on the show, their new music's really good. Like, that's the thing about One Direction, is that if they were just putting out stale teeny bopper stuff still, you wonder how much, you know, fandom they'd still command. I mean, I'm sure they'd still be huge, but it just helps that there are songs that you don't necessarily have to be a fan of teeny bopper music to really get and appreciate. So, yeah, man, this time next year, who knows what will be going on with One Direction. They'll be done their latest stadium tour, and maybe they'll have a fifth album out. Who knows? But it's been another impressive year for 1D. Moving on, Max Martin, another big winner this year, scoring hits for Taylor Swift. Obviously, Shake It Off, he had a huge hand in 1989's success, but also Problem, Ariana Grande, Bang Bang, Jessie J, Ariana, Nicki Minaj. Huge year for Max. I mean, would you call him the producer of the year? I argued for DJ Mustard.
I think it's tough because Max Martin's canon of work was limited to basically Katy Perry, Ariana Grande, you know, a J-Lo track, you know, the Jessie J Bang Bang, and then Taylor Swift. But all those songs were huge hits, whereas then you have someone like DJ Mustard, who we've talked about a lot on the podcast, who had a really varied career and did something like 20 different charting singles for a wide array of people, but they're all kind of in the hip-hop realm. So you could say that about him, too. I think in terms of just sort of sheer hits, Max Martin had an incredible year, and he's been so consistent for such a long time. And I look forward to him winning Producer of the Year at the Grammy Awards next year.
Wow. Yeah, he kind of had the Midas touch this year. And
my God, you and I could have a hit if Max Martin produced it.
Like, I know.
We don't even
know
if we can sing, but man, he would make it happen.
Bang, Bang, Bang remix starring Jason and Keith.
Bang, bang. I sound just like Jesse J. Not really. I don't know what I sound like.
Do that. All right. So we got a Don King and a Jesse J so far. Let's see where Keith goes.
Look up Jesse J shred. That shred YouTube of her doing Bang Bang. It's hilarious.
She was awesome on the podcast, man. I mean, she did Bang Bang acoustically. It was really cool.
I'm coming around to Jesse J to a degree. I used to find her super annoying.
Yeah, you called her anonymous on this podcast.
Well, I think she still is fairly anonymous, but I think in terms of just,
you're
I think
coming around to the
I'm
anonymity.
Coming around to just her in general. In general.
Well, speaking of hitmakers this year, I think this was a year where you had new stars kind of pop up, not from out of nowhere, but relatively unknowns at the beginning of the year, not only solidified themselves with one song, but multiple songs. You think of, so obviously, Iggy Azalea, who we talked about, but also Meghan Trainor, who has two top 10
surprisingly
hits now,
a second hit. Who thought that she would actually be able to pull?
Exactly,
you know,
man. Lips Are Moving is for real. Top five hit. Sam Smith as well, Stay With Me, but also his work on Latch.
Just sold a million copies of his album In the Lonely Hour, the third album in the United States in 2014 to actually sell a million. That's enormous.
It's funny because I remember when that album came out and Lana Del Rey debuted at number
denied
one that
him.
Week.
Yeah.
And
he
Sam
debuted
Smith
at number two.
Was number two. Yeah. And we said on this podcast, we were like, well, you know what? Stay With Me is a huge hit. He's got the radio behind him. I think, you know, overall that Sam Smith is going to win this, win the war, if not the battle. So,
boom.
But even though I also have Lana Del Rey on this list of stars that kind of established themselves, at least not in a different way than Sam Smith and Meghan Trainor, not with a hit single, but really with festival performances, really strong album sales. So she had a big year as well. Ariana Grande had a big 2013, but just kept that ball rolling.
How tall do you think Ariana Grande is? About 4'8"? 4'7"?
She's taller than that. I tower over her. I've met her before, and she, yeah.
I know. I've interviewed far, her before, far, and far I'm not that tall. You're taller than I am, but
I know.
I felt
you should
like
have seen me, dude. You should have seen me on the Women in Music red carpet. People like wanted me to crouch down because the red carpet there was so insane. Photographers were like heckling me. They were like, "This guy's too tall."
You're not that tall. You're like, how tall are you?
I'm like almost 6'3". Oh. I'm like 6'2.5". Yeah, I'm pretty. I'm kind of tall.
Did you talk to Ariana on the red carpet, by the way?
No, she was running late.
Boo.
It was a shame.
But yeah, she is. I mean, when I'm standing next to her, I'm like, ho ho ho, I'm going to eat you. You know, it was just. It's very. And I'm only like 5'9". She's just so petite and so little tiny.
One thing that we are going to have on this podcast next year is more Keith impersonations, more Keith voices.
I feel like it's like dumb, like radio. It's like dumb radio voice Keith. Hey.
I love it, man.
I'll turn it up a little bit more.
It's the holidays. I feel like we're all hopped up on sugar.
I'm still flying high from the Madonna interview, dude. Like, I'm going to be coasting for the next 2 weeks off of that contact high.
Oh, my goodness gracious. So, moving on, because we already got to wrap this up soon, but moving on. Two other stars I want to highlight just in terms of really establishing themselves this year. Ed Sheeran, who has an Album of the Year nomination with his sophomore album, Multiply. He had some really big radio hits with Don't and Sing and now Thinking Out Loud. And, you know, he seems like someone who's going to be around for a really long time.
Frankly, Ed Sheeran is just a dreamboat who's also quite talented. I was thinking about this last night, truly. Because okay. The ballad, the name of which escapes me, where he dances in the video,
Thinking Out Loud
came on the radio. And one, I was struck again by how he doesn't sound British at all. But that's an old thing. But I just thought about how he's been able to have such a great amount of success with keeping it really essentially pretty simple. You know, he does tours where it's just him and a guitar, and it's just him and his voice and the power of his words and the emotions that he can convey. At the same time, in my incredibly, you know, limited interactions with him, I think I've talked to him maybe like 2 or 3 times on red carpets. Yeah. So in total, I've talked to him for maybe 4 minutes. But he has been always like hilarious, chatty, seems like a really good down-to-earth dude.
Yeah, he always seems very honest. Like, he's not like media trained.
Yeah, I think it's the English
thing.
It's a British thing. But yeah, no, awesome. I think he really is setting himself up to have a really long career, and you know, who knew? I mean, I'm sure people that are his hardcore fans knew this, but he's sort of building that kind of legacy early on in his career that, you know, you can move on from, you know, like, you know, the sort of like John Mayer type, not like John Mayer, but you get the idea, you know, that sort of singer-songwriter thing.
No, I totally agree, and I've said this a million times, I've written it a million times, but he could have done an album of all A-teams, of all just kind of tender folk ballads and kind of stayed in that lane. But, you know, he worked with people like Benny Blanco and Rick Rubin and Pharrell Williams, and he tried to really diversify his sound.
And still
I really think it works.
Still keep it pure to Ed Sheeran, though. To still keep it very Ed-driven.
Keep it 100 Ed.
You know, like Madonna keeps Madonna and everything.
Oh, my God. Yeah. We can't keep
keeping
going.
Keeping it back. Damn you. Isn't it enough that I say that Ed Sheeran's a dreamboat? Come on.
Yeah,
that's
come on,
podcast
man.
Gold.
Well, one other thing besides Ed Sheeran, another artist, and then we have to wrap up. Lorde had a big year. She had a big year last year, obviously, with Royals, but she scored another top 10 hit this year with Team. And Pure Heroine, her debut album, continued to sell well in 2014, and she did her Hunger Games Mockingjay thing. And Song of the Year at the Grammys, so she's really established herself as well. Keith,
yeah,
we got to wrap up, man. We already have to wrap up. I know. It is time for your chart stat of the week.
Okay, so I'm actually borrowing this chart stat of the week from Gary Trust, who is my equivalent here in the charts department. He has the same title as me, except his is radio or airplay. Oh, anyway, 44 years ago, this month. Creedence Clearwater Revival topped the Beatles. Ooh, now isn't that an interesting headline? What I mean is, in 1970, Creedence Clearwater Revival reigned as the top album artist in Billboard's first year-end charts spotlight. That was the first year that we did sort of a big to-do about our year-end charts and our year-end review. And it was December 26, 1970 in that issue of Billboard. It was our first dedicated review dubbed Talent in Action of the previous 12 months' biggest acts, albums, and songs. And that year, the emergence of Creedence Clearwater Revival as the number one album artist signaled a new era in music had arrived. They actually beat the Beatles, who had just broken up that year, and that was a really big deal. And, you know, this particular honor, album artist, recognized the performance of an artist on the Billboard 200s chart, all of their albums combined, and Creedence was the biggest albums artist that year. It was interesting that they would beat the Beatles, though, that considering, you know, it was the Beatles. Anyhow, we also had a cool sort of forward-looking part of the Talent in Action spotlight where we talked about upcoming acts that were going to be primed for success. Among them were the Carpenters, for what we said was their melodic harmonies. James Taylor was going to be someone to look out for.
Hey-o.
We said he had a, quote, peaceful mixture of folk and rock. And also, be on the lookout for Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber, who wrote Jesus Christ Superstar. And we said that it was, that epitomized, quote, the attention rock was paying to religion in 1970. So anyway, it's a fun it's a fun thing to revisit the first time that we did sort of a big year in hoo-ha back in 1970. So that there you go, 44 years ago this week, Creedence Clearwater was the biggest artist in our year-end review.
There you go, man.
There you go.
That is your final 2014 chart stat of the week. All right, that's going to do it for us at the Pop Shop Podcast for 2014, and we will be back on January 8th. That's right, we are not taping a show next week. Enjoy the holidays. We'll be back on Thursday the 8th. We actually have a guest already planned for that one.
It'll and be another fun. One the following week, too.
I know. We're kicking off 2015 in a bang. Just really
with a
quickly,
bang, bang.
With a bang, bang. Just wanted to say a quick thanks to everyone who listened to the Pop Shop Podcast in 2014. It's been an amazing year. We started in October 2013, so this was our first full year, and we did some great stuff, and we got some really nice notes from, you know, longtime listeners and people asking us questions, people expressing enthusiasm. We see all that, and we appreciate all that, and keep listening, because we're going to do some really fun stuff in 2015. And thanks again from Jason and Keith. Keith, let's go out on Like a Prayer. Thanks for listening to the Pop Shop Podcast. Until 2015, take care.